Can you all hear this?
No.
Tune your hearing down. Listen to a lower pitch. As you listen to the sound of the bell, turn inward and go to that place that's really very deep inside. We're sometimes not used to that place because we're so externalized in our world and active, but use the breath to take you to a deep place. Like entering a beautiful sanctuary or a very beautiful cave, some place where you're quite deep. And feel very protected. Allow yourself to rest in that place. From deep within, what it is in these moments, in these days, in this current time in your life. It may just be something today that's arising, or it could be a theme that's arisen in life. What is that theme, and what are you being called upon to learn, or what is the antidote or the balancer at this point? What is that quality? Peace, Is it balance? Is it patience? Is it healing? Is it humor? Is it joy? Is it insight? Is it wisdom? Give it a word. What's your word? What is your life calling forth at this moment? What's the lesson? And use the breath to put that attribute, that quality, in the swing of the breath. So you breathe in that quality, and you breathe out that quality. And when you breathe it in, you expand every cell of the being. Every fiber resonates with that vibration of that quality. And as you breathe out, you infuse and enliven every fiber of your being with that quality. And what's more is you radiate it outward. And then again, drawing it in. And you can think of that quality, wherever it may be coming forth or manifesting in the world. What is a symbol? What are the icons? What are the beings, the people, the places that have that quality tuned to them, like you're tuning a radio? You know, the vibration is there, the wavelength is there. We could bring an electronic device into this room and start to tune it, and we would pick up invisible waves. It's like that. That's a physical scientific evidence that those kinds of waves exist in space, in time. And it's tuning. And so likewise, we're tuning ourselves. We're tuning ourselves to a pitch. We're tuning ourselves to a quality of vibration. So whatever your word is, your quality, reach out as you breathe out and touch that. And as you breathe in, draw it into your being. Tuning to that quality. Before we go any further with this session, those of us that know the Sufi invocation will say it together with palms pressed at the heart. And those that don't, press your palms together in a prayerful pulse at the heart. And make your own prayer of invocation, invoking whatever inspires you. If that's nature, let it be nature. If it's Jesus, let it be Jesus. If it's Buddha, let it be Buddha. If it's Yahweh, let it be Yahweh. Great Spirit, whatever that is, invoke the presence of that inspiration into this time together, into your being, asking for guidance, illumination, wisdom, a helping hand. Toward the one, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. And continue to keep the word on this swing of the breath. It's said that by putting a thought in the swing of the breath, we are literally circulating that thought, that attribute, that feeling, that quality through the entire being. We're putting the thought as if we're oxygenating the blood with it through the breath, and it circulates through the entire system, in the blood, and through the nervous system. Now we can run a little bit of an experiment to prove the point. If you let go of the thought or the word for a moment, let me suggest another word. Watch your physical response, watch your emotional response to this quality. Be very observant, turn within, and observe. Happy. Happy. Joyful. Joyful. Frustrated. Frustrated. Peaceful. Peaceful. Angry. Angry. Calm. Peaceful. Peaceful. Let's take a moment and check in. Anybody want to talk about what they observed in their body? What happened just by those few moments and going into the different words? Could you feel a difference?
I could definitely feel the difference, but what really surprised me when you said frustration, I stopped breathing in mid-breath, totally, and then completed it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, good. Anyone else?
I felt either an expansion or a contraction. Frustrated, it was just breaking with the heart.
Mm-hmm.
That seemed to be the key word, because on that one I also felt like my exhale was very much more like the sigh you give when you're frustrated, like
deep. So the breath changed. Mm-hmm. Did you feel anything in the body too?
Sort of brought frustrations that I may be feeling anyway, sort of that kind of release of that feeling does give you when you experience them when you don't know.
Yeah. Anyone else?
Okay. Yeah, I didn't want to breathe at all when you said frustration and anger. I just didn't want any part of that energy. And I saw every word you said is a different color, and those were pretty intense and awful. Yeah, black and red, just like knots. Okay, I don't want to do that. I don't want to breathe that in.
Yeah, so that's a really good way to see. Just in, how long did that take? A minute? 2 minutes? And each word, maybe 5 seconds? But it's also interesting to see the agility of the mind, you see, and how suggestion can have such an impact on us. So that's part of why we're here, and that's part of what these teachings bring to us. And Karen and Lauren, we've been at these teachings now for over a year. It's a progressive series. So I hope you'll enjoy it. I hope you'll find it a benefit and that you'll come back, because in some ways it's not fair to you that you're sort of here just in this one isolated moment. But I'm sort of backtracking just a little bit, because the first of this new series, which began in February, March, had to do with this breath on the swing. And you can see again, it's a matter of tuning. If we are feeling angry and frustrated and we can grab the the force behind it, not necessarily the emotion, but the energy, and we can use the energy to sort of turn the mind, so to speak. Because at one level, it's all energy. You see, we've learned to address it as this is good, this is bad. So my advice to people is, when you feel the energy of anger or frustration, do something about it. Use the energy of it. You know, get up and clean out a drawer or a closet or scrub the bathtub or, you know, something, because that it transforms the energy into something productive, and it helps to sort of turn the mind a bit. And also, if you can, and I ask people to do something active, because a lot of times you just sit and you can't make yourself change.
I noticed my body wanted to do something. It was like when you said happy, it was like my feet wanted to go dance. And when you said frustration, it was like I wanted to go.
Yeah. And it's always this contraction. You can recognize it as a contraction. And that's the very moment we need to release. So if we can realize that, like, oh, here it is. And then maybe changing also the awareness, like we just did, because to something like calm or peace or happy, or but to try to transform the energy. Does that make sense? So these are like tools. I mean, there's the esoteric readings, but then how do we use them is really very important, I think, in every, you know, spirituality in everyday life. So you can always, now throughout this next time together, and I should mention, usually we're free all day and all night on Saturdays, but tonight we're obligated. We're going to take my mom and my sister and the priest at my mother's church out to dinner for Father's Day.
Aww.
And so we're going to leave about 5, so I'm going to have Joe keep an eye on the time for me. We'll probably close about 4 or 4:15, and we have some snacks, and so we can share a little bit and talk a little bit, but about 5, we're going to move you along so we can have some quiet time, and this boy can eat, and we can get on the road. So go back to your word. Now, I'm sort of doing some different things today, but has anyone read this book by Sri Aurobindo, Sivatri? It's his translation of sort of an epic, mythic tale, Indian classical tale. But I wanted to read just a few words as a way of kind of setting the breath and setting the tone. And so listen to these words, and you can always use your word or your quality that came to you. Did everyone have one, by the way? Good. So that can be your touchstone, so to speak. So this is the first such an amazing book. It's these archetypal characters that represent the soul and consciousness. And so I'm going to just read this first page, which it's almost hard to get off the first page because it's just so beautiful. And this is called Book One, The Book of Beginnings. The Book of Beginnings. So it's a little bit like Genesis, I think, in the Bible. And this is called The Symbol of Dawn, D-A-W-N. So just, this is story time now. And this is so, so profound and deep. I hope you can hear these words. And it's written in poetic, sort of poetic form, so that's, you'll hear that. The symbol of dawn. It was the hour before the gods awake. Across the path of the divine event, the huge foreboding mind of night alone, in her unlit temple of eternity, lay stretched immobile upon silence mark, almost one felt opaque, impenetrable in the somber symbol of her eyeless muse, the abysm of the unembodied infinite, the fathomless zero occupied the world. God, what a profound line is that. The fathomless zero occupied the world. Between the first and the last nothingness. Recalling the tenebrous womb from which it came, turned from the insoluble mystery of birth and the tardy process of mortality, and longed to reach its end in vacant naught. As in a dark beginning of all things, a mute, featureless semblance of the unknown, repeating forever the unconscious act, prolonging forever the unseen will, cradle the cosmic drowse of ignorant force, whose moved creative slumber kindles the suns and carries our lives in its somersault whirl, athwart the vain, enormous trance of space, its formless stupor without mind or life, a shadow spinning through the soulless void, thrown back once more into unthinking dreams, earth wheeled abandoned in the hollow gulfs, forgetful of her spirit and fate. The impassive skies were neutral, empty, still. Then something in the inscrutable darkness stirred. A nameless movement, an unthought idea, insistent, dissatisfied, without an aim. Something that wished but knew not how to be. Could you get a glimpse of that, capture a piece of that? So beautiful. So it's speaking of those profound moments, which often aren't recognized because we're so busy, we don't see them or recognize them. There are those moments, those kind of gaps. And in meditation, those gaps are like the rising of the breath and the moment before it turns and it goes out again. I mean, that's exactly the somersault that we're talking about here. And it's like we're so externalized and active and involved. But then what really is important is that inner awareness and those moments. And if we're too busy, we miss those important moments. So just go back to that word, that touchstone that came in the beginning meditation. It's the medicine. It's like medicine, or spiritual food or communion. And Diane, just to bring you up to speed, we had a meditation in the beginning, and we went deep within in the breath. I know you know how to do this because we do this in our class at the college. And we used a visualization of entering into a sanctuary of some kind. It could be a cave, a beautiful temple, where we felt very comforted and stilled. And in that place, we became aware of the call of these moments in our lives. So what is a theme that's arising? Maybe it's some sort of a struggle, or there's a longing. But what is that that's being called forth for us to learn what's our next step. And then we asked that the quality to bring about greater understanding, balance, healing, awareness, whatever that might be, that we asked for a word to present itself to us that would be the antidote or the quality to help us come to greater understanding. And so that's our touchstone, that's our word, and each one will have a different one based on their life. You see, in Sufism, we're here because this is the group of teachings that we're following given by Hazrat Anay Khan. It's an individuated path of self-realization that each individual's on, although there are these groups that meet, meditate together. We do have shared teachings, but they're to be applied individually to each person's life. And in that way, it's a path of initiation. And each person has their own unfoldment, not prescribed by a particular doctrine or told by in a certain way, but that each person's life is their own testament. It is their own unfoldment. Now, just for the benefit of Lauren and Karen, and maybe to some extent also Naomi and Diane, if you look up the word Sufi in the dictionary or in the encyclopedia, you're going to find quite a different meaning than the understanding of most people that are on this path. Sufism really means, it comes from the word Safiya, which means wisdom. And Sufism really took root in Persia. And there was the crossroads of the East and the West, and it was informed by the religions of the East, such as Hinduism and Buddhism, and other ones that you may not be so aware of, Jainism, things like that. It was also informed of the religions of the region, Zoroastrianism, the path of purity. Further, it was informed by the religion of Christianity, service to others, of Judaism. From that, it got this great sort of moral culture and a codified kind of law of ethics. And from the Islamic world, it brought about a devotion, a servitude to God, which in its highest aim, that is what Islam is. It's gotten distorted, especially in these days. So it drew upon all these various traditions and became a kind of distillation of that wisdom. And so that's what we're doing here. That's the body of teachings that have been laid before us, and that's what we're sharing. So I hope that illuminates a little bit about this study circle and what we're doing. But because of that, we have a great latitude to bring in these other traditions, because the other traditions have informed this one tradition. And what's more is this aspect or school of Sufism welcomes and honors all the world religions, whether known or unknown, and respects them. It doesn't try to change anyone. You know, I'm still Catholic, even though I'm also a Sufi. And the two Joes are still Buddhist, and so on and so forth. So whatever your path is, that is your path. So use the breath, the swing of the breath for your word. And I'm going to review a few sentences from the previous month's teachings. The first month, but I think it must have been February. It was about putting an idea or a thought on the swing of the breath and circulating it. That using the movement of the breath would infuse the whole sort of biological system as well as our mind and our emotions with this quality. In March, the teaching was on regularity of breath. And I'll read only a few sentences, but they're important. As the mechanism of the body depends on the breath for its substance, as well as for its health, so the breath is important in sustaining the mind and keeping its work regular. So the breath and the mind are connected, and we saw that when we did the little exercise of the different emotions. We felt our breath shift when we had things that were uncomfortable for us to call to mind, and the breath perhaps got more relaxed or uplifted during some of those. So that was a proof in point. So Hazaradanaik Khan goes on further to say, mostly confusion, depression, or any other disorder of the mind arises from the disorder of breathing. People who will become impulsive or show irritability in nature, who become impatient at times, get fits of anger, passion, or laughter, who get fits of tears, all have an irregularity of breathing, and this can cause these ills. So sometimes you'll hear meditators say, when one is in appearing to be in an imbalanced state, grab your breath. You've heard that. That's what that means. Grab hold of your breath. Control your breath. Make your breath come into a different cycle. You can also use the breath to sort of look inward, to kind of cast your mind inward. So let's try another experiment. So this has to do with using the breath to help you clear the mind and stabilize the mind so that you can get to your own inner wisdom, your own inner knowledge. We've done this before, but we'll do it again for the benefit of those who are not here. So you can let go of your word if you've been concentrating on it. And just sit quietly in a rather neutral state. You can just observe your breath. You can feel it going in and out. If you need a concentration, concentrate at the tip of the nose or on the nostrils. And feel the movement of the breath as it moves in and out. Make sure the breath is very regular and balanced. And what I mean by that is that the rhythm of the inhalation matches the rhythm or the counting of the exhalation. So it's very balanced, not only in its duration, but within its fullness. So sort of imagine you're breathing in a certain amount of air, and then you breathe out that exact amount of air. So everything comes into a kind of equilibrium, a balance. An equipoise. And then call to mind again something in life that's a particular challenge for you. It may be what arose initially at the beginning of the class, it may be something else, but something that's kind of this. You know, grist for the mill, so to speak. You know, like something that's really pertinent. Could be a particular difficulty that's arisen, but watch the breath and keep it very relaxed. Nothing to do but allow this situation to arise in your mind. And the trick here is not to analyze it, not push it away, not start an inner dialogue around it. Just let it come and sit next to you, like you're sitting near a great ocean, or you could be in your temple or your cave, or you could be on a cliff overlooking this huge spacious landscape. Or you could be by a river, whatever you want, some place that's very calming for you. Invoke that and sit there. And it's like a companion has come to sit next to you. And in this instance, the companion is the situation. And you just let it be. There's enough space there. And then, you know, kind of with that sense of, I always call to mind sort of two men sitting on the riverbank fishing, and it's kind of like one says something and the other one goes, yep. Another one says something, the other one goes, yep. That kind of just spaciousness. Sort of talk to your fishing buddy next to you and ask it what it's trying to teach you. And you may be quite surprised at what the response is. And you may feel something touched inside of you or moved by that response. A new kind of insight or an awareness beyond the ordinary thinking. Just kind of remember that and think about now turning to your companion and thanking them for being there with you and opening maybe some awareness, some understanding, a new point of view. And kind of just say goodbye and release. Release the idea, the thought, of that situation, the companion of sorts. So let's take a moment. We don't need to share with anyone our particular situation, but I just kind of want to check in and see if that was an effective exercise for people. Yeah? Something came up, maybe something different than last month? New situation? The people that were here last month? Mm-hmm. Yeah, see? It just changes. It's like that. Mm-hmm. Always something new to learn. Just have to show up. Lauren, did you get something? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And did something unexpected arise in terms of a response of how to maybe handle that or a new insight for anybody?
I got a completely new perspective on this, a more generous perspective to a particular person.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
That's great.
And yeah, it was very helpful.
Yeah, yeah. Anyone else?
It went back to my original
Did it?
Word that came in earlier that I was focusing on, and that was the answer to
good.
What it was trying to teach me.
And was that expected when you first started?
Not completely. I mean, I think in the back of my mind it is, but it's, I've not allowed myself to think that. So.
Good.
It's good.
Good. And so then we can kind of see that these situations that maybe are troublesome to us, if we sort of keep in the ordinary thinking modality, we can maybe go in circles a bit. Do you find that's the case? Mm-hmm. It's like these habituated patterns that we kind of are, it's like a groove. In fact, Hazrat Anayat Khan talks about it. He was a musician, and he did record... during the time when they made records. Now we make other kinds of things, digital files and things. But he does liken it, and I think it is a good example of like a rut or a scratch in the record. The needle keeps wanting to go there. Or in the road, you know, like a road where there's a rut and, you know, there's that gravitation. And so then our ordinary or habituated thinking is like that. But then if we can just allow something to be without, you know, too much energy, it's almost like the answers are all there, but can we relax and allow them to arise? Did you get anything, Kabri, about your situation? Or that might not have been the thing that came up, but...
Yeah, slightly unexpected.
Good. Was it helpful?
Yes.
Good. Did everyone get something? Diane, are you with us, hon? Or are you just going into a deep state?
Yeah.
Okay. So, the next month, which must have been April, was on the power of life. Again, these are all teachings on breath. So listen to this and see if you don't feel this also in your own body or recognize this. So, Hazrat Anayat Khan says, on breath depends the capability and efficiency with which one thoroughly does one's work. Shortness of breath gives man impatience. Lack of endurance and irregularity of the rhythm of the breath gives man confusion and makes him inclined to be easily upset. Regular and rhythmic breathing gives health to body and mind both. Right breathing makes the mind vibrate, and vibration is the sign of life. So it makes the mind vibrate. Now we know that modern science is telling us that consciousness, which might be called mind, isn't just about a thinking apparatus, and it's not just located in the brain. For example, they're doing now experiments trying to discover how consciousness exists in the body. And what they're finding is that they can take... It was really quite an unexpected revelation, but it happened rather recently, where they had taken a specimen of blood from someone, and it was in a laboratory in another area. And that person... The blood was being examined, and the person that from which the blood was extracted was being stuck with another needle. And the blood down the hall reacted to it. So it's telling us that consciousness is not even just limited to this, but that consciousness is in even the samples of blood that is somewhere else. That there's a web of consciousness that connects things. The Buddhists say everything's interconnected. It's true. It's like almost like this huge spider web, and you know, the spider just has to do this, and the whole thing moves. And that's like us, our thoughts, our feelings, our breath, are contributing to this whole It's pretty amazing when you think about that, that consciousness is in that sample of blood and has the same reaction as the person. It changes our thinking about how we think and feel. That's why, you know, they have documented it. When people have had organ transplants, they take on some of the qualities of the person whose organ they've inherited. This is how this happens. This isn't hocus pocus. This isn't crazy mysticism, spirituality. There's scientific evidence of this. Now, he knew about this, you know, in the early 1900s. He was teaching this all over Europe and some in America. But here now we have scientific evidence almost a decade later. And his knowledge came from his own experience, but also these ancient teachings throughout history, throughout humanity. So I like to bring in science because I think it profoundly illuminates these spiritual points, which sometimes are not... they seem quite unbelievable till you know that there is a scientific dimension as well. So on the next chapter, which must have been last month, yeah, was on full breath.
Hi, honey.
You're so sweet. Hasrat Khan says, the importance of the breath in the body is like the influence of the weather in the world. As the body and mind act and react to one another, so the influence of the breath takes the chief place in directing the mind and the body. Every emotion is caused by the breath flowing in a certain direction and also the degree of the force of the breath. Every emotion is caused by the breath flowing in certain directions, also the degree or the force of the breath. So, for example, if you're feeling depressed, watch your breath. You can be very assured that it's in a downward motion and it's very long on the exhalation. Observe if you have that tendency. If you have the tendency to be excitable and you can't calm your mind, you can be very assured that the flow of the breath is upward and that the inhalation is quite rapid and maybe not very much exhalation. But how does one know this? One knows this by observing one's breath and studying this very deeply and meditating, observing. You can be like a laboratory, like even with the experiment we did earlier with the emotions, observing what happens to my breath when I feel joyful and how is that different when I'm happy and what's calm do and is that different than peace? Yes, they're all different. They're different attributes. So observing one's own breath, one can then become sensitive to that. And I like to think of us as these like little power towers, you might say, you know? It's a new analogy that's coming, or metaphor. I also think of us as these lighthouses. I mean, think of that as a metaphor. Like a lighthouse, how incredible that is if we could be like these lighthouses and we're kind of like amped up by the solar power, but it's like the divine light, right? And we're like, you know, life are those crashing waves, and we're just stable, and we're just this beacon of radiant light, and we're just beaming. Mm-hmm. And we're there in the port for all beings that are lost. They don't know where the shore is. They need help. Think of yourself that way. And that's why we do these practices, because we help ourselves, but we help the world and all those beings. And why am I emphasizing this? Because the next chapter has to do with rhythmic breath, but a kind of telepathy. when we study our own breath, we are not, we realize we are not single isolated beings. We are, you look like you're ready to run, Joe. Are you okay? You're getting a cramp in your leg or something, maybe? So anyway, the thing is that when our minds, through the use of the breath, become clear, it's like a couple analogies also that I like. If you think of a jar with water in it and sediment at the bottom, when you pick up the jar and you do this, or like those snowballs, you know, with the seams in them, like when you let it sit and be still, what happens? All that settles down and you can see very clearly the image there. This is our mind. This is how our mind and our hearts work. So meditation, observance of the breath, does that. It lets all that stuff settle down so we can see clearly within ourselves and also within others. But if we're always doing this, well, you know, it's like, you know, if you have a jar that's a clear water but sediments in the bottom, it's going to get real muddy and you can't see through it. Or like those little snowballs, you can't see the scene very clearly. And life is like that. So taking some time every day to sit and breathe and meditate and do prayers or practices, whatever you do, it helps that settle down. And then we see ourselves more clearly, but also we start to be clear enough in our own vibration that we start to see in our interaction with others, is that a reflection of our own mind? Can you hear that? Is that a reflection of our own mind? Because we're seeing that externally, but it's resonating something within us. We're interpreting in a certain way. Is that a reflection? Does that make sense to you? I mean, it's almost like psychology. That's what this is like. We can heal ourselves. We can come into balance. What we see, is this a reflection? Or if somehow something, the other thing is, it can be a projection. So it can be something coming from outside us, toward us, and sometimes we don't know. Like if you have the tendency to not sort of know your own mind, and it's like, well, do you want to go for a, you know, I don't know. You want to go to Dairy Queen, or do you want to go to, you know, Custard Last Stand, or whatever they're called, and you're like, well, I don't really know. What do you want, you know? I mean, that kind of ambivalence can be a kind of lack of clarity or determination, too. And so, I mean, maybe that's a trivial example, but if you find yourself in that way, one could consider that they might be also very sensitive to projections that come at them. And they may be absorbing these vibrations or these qualities, and they're getting, you know, it's like, becomes like static, because it's like, gets confused with your own, and then it's like, you know, you're trying to hear what's going on inside and all this other stuff's coming. I mean, have you ever just been going along and you're just fine and then all of a sudden it's like, you don't feel, you feel like you've lost your energy, you've gotten terribly depressed or sad and it's real sudden, it doesn't seem to come from anywhere? Anyone have that happen? Well, look around. Or maybe turn on the news. Did something just happen in the world? Are you receiving that somehow, that vibration? Or is it someone near you, you know, someone you work with, or some, you know, neighbor that, it happens. It doesn't mean they're a bad person or they really even mean it. It could be terribly unconscious. And but do we receive it? Does it affect us? A lot of times, yes, because we don't know. We can't, the snow hasn't settled in the globe enough, and we don't know. So when I'm very careful about getting into this subject, because I really, really very strongly do not feel that any form of intuition or telepathy or insight has anything to do with infringing on another person's being. You know, people want to learn this kind of stuff or study it because they think it's really cool to be able to read people's thoughts. Why? I've got enough going on in my head. You know what I'm saying? It's like, what does that matter? You know, it's like going to the end of the book first, you know, wanting to read the end before, you know, letting the mystery unravel. But why? in this instance, what Hazrat Anayat Khan is trying to teach us, and I'm going to read a little bit, but I kind of wanted to give a framework, and that's why I've reviewed. He's been setting us up, if you've been paying attention, put a thought in the swing of your breath, regulate your breath, note how mind and breath are interconnected. There is a process here, just I'm going to kind of try to make you aware of this. And why am I repeating it? Because he's leading us up to this point of when you really study the breath and you look deeply into that subject, they call it the culture of breath, then what starts to arise is a kind of intuition or insight. And we all have it. You know, I know almost all the time when I'm going to be outside, a lot of times I won't take the phone with me because I know no one's going to call. And there are other times I better take that phone with me because someone's going to call. You have that? Or somebody calls and, oh, it's probably so-and-so. You don't even know really that they're going to be calling, or you just have these ideas. These are kinds of bleed-through experiences, maybe. But why do we have them? I mean, contrary to what most of us believe, it isn't all about us. It's about being that light tower or that lighthouse. And so when Anayat Khan talks about it, he's trying to prepare us to be of greater service, first to ourselves, and then to be able to offer something to another. So, for example, when someone comes before us and they've been hurt in some way, you don't need them to tell you about it. You feel it. And words are really often obstructions. But if you're tuned, you can feel something. And then it doesn't really take words or analysis. It takes putting a thought on the swing of the breath and offering it into the atmosphere. You know? And I like the analogy of, I think people that are really good parents understand that. You know, they know when a child's like acting crazy, instead of getting upset, they know that maybe the child needs to be tethered, and they can focus the child's attention, or they can hold the child or stroke the child and calm it down. That's a kind of intuition that some people have. And we can develop that. And this whole body of teaching has been leading up to this point, I believe. So when you start to get those ideas, it's not about interfering with another person's thought, but clearly also asking, is it yours to do? You know, for example, someone last week contacted me who had a task before them. It's a pretty big task, and it's a new thing for her to undertake. And she left a message, and she said, could you help me with this? And I'm the kind of person where I have the tendency to, like, want to help. And I thought about it, and I thought, this is not mine to do. And I knew what I had to do was to tell her no. But not just no. What I said was, I know that you would not have been given this task if the people that gave it to you did not have the utmost confidence in you, in your capability. And I know that you can do this. And if I help you, then I take from you the privilege of knowing that you can do it and learning from that experience. And so I really want you to know that I really believe in you and that I know that you can do this. And please don't be disappointed. And she responded, oh, I'm not disappointed. And you know, now that you reflect that back, I know that this is really mine to do, and I will do it, and I will get courage to do it. But, you know, I could have easily taken the lesson away from her, because sometimes we think that's what we're supposed to do. Oh, I'll help. It won't take that much time, and then I'll be, like, a really great person. But you know what? It would have only weakened her and made her more afraid in the future to not feel competent. Right? You understand the difference? But how did I know that? Listening. Sometimes it's the quality in someone's voice, you hear something, or a look. In this instance, I did not see her. But I kind of know her temperament, and I also had some insight there. So at any rate, that's how you operate, and then you know how to act to help people. Sometimes helping is not doing anything. Does that make sense? Yeah. So again, when we get these impressions or these intuitions, we have to know, we have to ask, is this a reflection from my own mind? Second, is it a projection from another mind? Then we have to assess what's the course of action. And you know, people that are great I'm just sort of calling to mind, you know, people that trying to think of an example. I don't have one right now. There are too many, so I'm waiting for the right one to come. So I'll read this about rhythmic breath. Thought is conveyed without speech through the breath. And then this is an old term, but Hazrat and I Khan says, the true wireless telegraphy is rightly established, is the rightly established current of breath. It is difficult for every man to try it without practice and concentration and in absence of the development of breath. Though unconsciously, thoughts are always exchanged through the agency of breath. So, have you ever been in the grocery store line and the person behind you is obviously irritated? What does that do to you?
Or the post office line. I don't
wherever.
Know. Wherever. I just say, I'm here, you're there.
Yeah. Good for you. But other people, do you have you find your breath maybe changes? And how do you know it? It's because of their movements and their breath usually, right? I mean, a lot of times they're not saying anything. It's just a feeling. So here's an example. You know, we have this all the time. And then we leave, and it's kind of, if we let it hang on, it can affect our whole day. Think about it. Grab the breath. The scientist is ready to believe that contagious diseases are spread by the means of the breath. It is part of psychology to realize that thoughts and mental states, such as humor, depression, energy, or sloth, are conveyed by the means of the breath. Isn't it true? Haven't you been around some people and they're tired or they don't feel well and you feel it? Or they're really happy and even if you're sad, sometimes they can get you in that one too and you start laughing and you forget a little bit of what was going on. It's that. In the presence of an angry person, one feels excited and inclined to anger. The contact of a humorous person spreads around an atmosphere of humor. In the presence of a cold person, one becomes cold. The contact with the warm-hearted person warms one. This is done by the medium of the breath. Once we practice yoga, the true meaning of yoga, not just no stretching, no, that doesn't that feel good. This is like an inner yoga, an inner concentration, meaning union. So yogis who rise above the thoughts and feelings of those around them attain power by the power of breath. Attain power by the control of the breath. Let me read it again. Yogis who rise above the thoughts and feelings of those around them attain power by the control of breath. Knowledge of another person's pleasure or displeasure, the message of affection, the warning of hostility, all are received by the way of the breath. The one who is conscious of the rhythm, not just the quality, but the rhythm of breath, and whose breath is pure of grossness, begins to perceive a sense, which in time becomes a language to him or her. And then he goes on to say, thought reading is not necessarily intuition, although many confuse thought reading with intuition. There is not much difference between the working of these two faculties. The difference is like that between the telephone and the telegraph. I'm waiting for the explanation of that, are you? Thought reading comes from without. Intuition comes from within. Does that make sense? So the thought reading comes from without. It's something that's coming at us. Intuition, something that arises from within. Yet for both, rhythmic breath and a clear mind are necessary. The rhythmic breath helps the mind to be clear. Breath breaks up the congestion. And he even goes on to say, which is in the head, which produces confusion. Sometimes, isn't it true, if you have a stuffed up head, you don't think so clearly? But there's also channels, sort of very subtle channels that run through that part of the body that also get clear. We've had it reported here, some of you may remember, there have been people that have recounted to us that they've had a stuffed up head or a headache or something, and in the practice, the breath has loosened that up. And he goes on to say that when it breaks up the congestion in the heart, it helps to relieve depression. And both of these cover the thoughts of others from one's perception, if there's confusion or depression, and even one's own intuition. We don't have insight when there's that congestion. A thought is better conveyed to another through breath than by speech, for a feeling put into words becomes half dead.
Read that again.
That, just that sentence?
The one before it, too.
Okay. The rhythmic breath helps the mind to be clear. Breath breaks up the congestion, which in the head produces confusion, and in the heart, depression, which covers the thoughts of others from one's perception, even from one's intuition. A thought is better conveyed to another through breath than by speech, for a feeling put into words becomes half dead.
Wow.
Isn't it kind of true? Think about, like, really profound moments of experience, and then trying to put it, sometimes you cannot put it into words, and if you do put it into words, it's like, it has made it dead. It's not so much a living experience anymore. You know what I'm saying? It's not so dynamic.
Well, it's like bringing the infinite, trying to bring it in finite,
yeah,
quote, unquote, reality. It doesn't happen.
It's concretized it in some ways, and it's not as living.
But yet
so
the Bible says, thou shalt decree a thing and it shall come to pass. So if you do say something, there really is power in your word. Like if I say, I expect to win this point in tennis this morning, I didn't get it, because expect is like try, lose.
Right,
but if I
right.
say,
I win this point.
I win this point.
Yeah.
No nonsense.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. That's true.